This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
This month in the news. On the 26th of January, NASA remembered all those who lost their lives to the exciting but extremely dangerous business of space exploration. The annual Day of Remembrance was established in the memory of the fallen crews of Apollo 1 and space shuttles Challenger and Columbia. This year was particularly special as it marked the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 1 tragedy, when an explosive fire claimed the lives of three NASA astronauts, Roger Chaff, Virgil Gus Grissom, and Edward White. Apollo 1 was the first one from the series of missions with the ultimate goal of putting American astronauts on the surface of the moon. NASA planned to launch the crew on the 21st of February 1967 and conduct an around 2 weeks long test flight in the low Earth orbit. On the 27th of January, less than a month before the planned launch, an important plugs-out simulation was being carried out, with the capsule mounted on the top of the Saturn 1B rocket, parked on pad 34 in Cape Canaveral. The test was meant to determine whether the spacecraft was capable of running on the internal power supply only, detached from all the external power sources. The module was filled with pure oxygen at the pressure higher than the atmospheric pressure, and the module hatch was closed in order to make the test more realistic. This ultimately sealed the fate of the crew. From the very beginning, there were problems with the communications between the crew and the team overseeing the test. After numerous complaints from Grissom, the test was put on hold to give engineers time to solve the problems. At around 3:31 p.m., still during the hold period, fire broke out inside the command module. It spread quickly through the capsule, mostly due to the pure oxygen atmosphere, ultimately killing all three astronauts inside it. The crew sent to rescue them was unable to open the hatch due to the large pressure difference between the outside and the inside of the CSM, and was only able to reach the already dead astronauts after several minutes. Immediately after the accident, NASA launched the investigation, which found numerous errors and omissions on both the engineering and managerial side. Bad wiring was found to be the most probable cause of the fire, with the pure oxygen atmosphere and the use of extremely flammable materials inside the capsule only increasing the severity of the fire. Floor hatch design, which could not be quickly removed by the crew in case of emergency, was also identified as a factor contributing to the astronaut's death. A number of recommendations have been made which increase the security around the design and test of the subsequent modules, and gave astronauts the chance to influence the design and safety of the mission. This month, we also remember Eugene Cernan, the last astronaut to walk on the surface of the moon in 1973 during the Apollo 17 mission. He died on the 16th of January at the age of 82 in hospital in Houston, Texas. It seems like every month brings astronomers closer to solving the mystery of fast radio bursts. If one publication is not enough, the first week of 2017 saw the release of three new papers that try to explain the origin of the FRBs. They focus on the FRB 121102, first observed in 2012 with the help of the Arecibo radio telescope. Of the around 20 FRBs discovered to date, it is the only one known to repeat, challenging a number of theories which predict one-off cataclysmic events. An international team of astronomers turned to interferometry with the use of the Very Large Array, and was able to obtain a more accurate position of the source of the burst. During 83 hours of observations distributed over 6 months, the burst was detected 9 additional times. A persistent radio source has also been discovered close to the FRB, with a separation of less than 500 parsecs at the distance of less than 1.7 gigaparsecs. Three theories were put forward to explain this unlikely coincidence. These sources might be two separate, non-interacting objects found in the same host galaxy. Second possibility is that these objects interact, but so far we have not been able to directly observe this interaction, and the source of interaction is currently unknown. Third theory assumes that these two sources are in fact one object, most probably involving very energetic bursts from the active galactic nucleus at the center of the host galaxy. At this stage, it is however impossible to definitely discard or confirm any of the above interpretations. The second publication focuses on better understanding the properties of the host galaxy. Through the use of spectroscopy, scientists were able to get an independent estimate of the galaxy's redshift. The redshift obtained this way was almost 2 times smaller than in the study described above. This discrepancy was mainly caused by the uncertainties in the electron density model, which is usually used by scientists to estimate the distance to FRBs or pulsars, when no spectroscopic observations can be taken. The researchers also argued that the properties of the very small host galaxy, with the diameter of less than 4 kiloparsec, make it very unlikely to contain an active galactic nucleus. For comparison, our own Milky Way has the estimated diameter of 30 to 35 kiloparsecs, almost 10 times more than the estimated diameter of the possible host galaxy. The last study provides better constraint on the separation between the FRB and the persistent radio source. The largest possible separation between the two has been lowered from 500 parsecs to just 40 parsecs. Two possible scenarios were considered this time: a neutron star powering a supernova remnant or an active galactic nucleus. But again, there was no enough evidence to favour one theory over another. Even though Arecibo is still delivering useful science, including the FRB 121102 mentioned before, its existence is under threat. One of the most famous and the most recognisable radio observatories in the world, partially thanks to its appearance in Hollywood blockbusters including Contact and GoldenEye, it's facing the possibility of being shut down due to the lack of funding. The US National Science Foundation has recently announced it was looking for financial help from partners in order to fund the operation of this 300-meter diameter giant. The NSF currently funds the majority of the telescope's operation, providing $8 million of the observatory's $12 million annual budget, but says it will be able to provide only $20 million over the course of the next 5 years. Those interested in effectively running the radio telescope are asked to submit their proposals by late April this year. However, this NSF has warned that if no suitable candidates are identified, other possibilities will have to be considered. The worst case scenario involves completely shutting the observatory down.
Thanks for that, Matt. Now Monique interviews Dr. Teo Munoz Darius about X-ray.